Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the new media show. And Rob, your cat wants to be a star.
He does. He wants to be a podcaster, I think.
Yeah, I think he says, oh, there's a target. Let me go over there. And he's sitting still. Let me go rub up against him. Or go rub up against the monitor or something. It's weird.
Yeah, he wants to actually get in my lap is what he wants to do. So, and then he gets in my lap and then he changes his mind. So anyway. So Todd, how are you doing? It sounds like you had a busy week last week. Of course, your time is your most valuable possession right now, I gather, just based on what you were saying.
Yeah, you know, and it's kind of odd because I there's never enough hours in a day, and it's one of the reasons why we're now finally hiring some more people, because it just, you know, there's just no way to keep up. It's impossible, you know.
Yeah.
So I've gotten to the point now where I'm behind, so we're bringing someone in, and maybe that person can take over some of my time. A lot of my time. And we're going to split their duties, so they're going to kind of be a little bit of a PA for me, and at the same time help us with about a smorgasbord of a list of that long. So, you know, we stayed lean and mean for years, and we're doing okay. So I said, let's bring someone on, and I think the job posting goes out next week. So we'll start hopefully being able to interview folks in another 2 weeks or something. But yeah, you know, the space is busy. It's an interesting time in the new media space. It's, you know, I guess for better words, we're back in the golden age. I don't know. It's kind of odd. It's good.
Yeah. I mean, I think so too. I mean, I'm actually looking to hire somebody too. So, I mean, I think that, all of the companies in this space, I mean, I keep seeing on Facebook other companies that are like the mid-roll, and those folks are hiring people too to help expand and grow this industry. And I think it's all fantastic news to hear that companies are hiring and expanding, and they're busy, and you know, their CEOs are working around the clock. That's always a good sign that things are happening.
You know, at 8 years into the game, I don't want to work around the clock.
And, well, why is that, Todd? Aren't you, you know, no, I know exactly what you're saying.
You
it's
know?
Like, I mean, you have to have some work-life balance, I think.
Yeah, you know, and there has been no work-life balance for 10 years, so it's time.
Yep.
You know, I guess that's why I have the gray hair now, you know. I had someone comment on me, when I first started watching, you had a full head of hair and it was dark. I'm like, well, I still have a full head of hair, but you can't see because I hide it so well. But
there's still some hair up there. That's what I keep saying, because it's not going to be there forever.
No. And unfortunately, I'm going to probably acquire the trait from my mom's father. He had a landing strip right down here, and I'm just thinking, oh my god, it's gonna be horrible. I might as well just go bald at that point. But
well, that's what a lot of guys wind up doing in the end, right? It's just they keep, you know, just go to the dark side, go to the bald side.
Yeah, my wife says I can be married to a bald fat guy, but I can be married to a fat guy, but I can't be married to a bald fat guy. So I'll have to lose some weight before I'll go bald.
Well, Todd, you'll have to make up for it and start growing a big beard. I mean, that's what a lot of guys do, right?
No. I'm not. That's an out here, so it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So I wanted to share with you a little bit. Of course, we've just been wrapping it down, but for everyone, good morning. And it's just going to be Rob and I today, and we thought we would just chat about the space. And if you have comments on the show, you can always email us here, todd@newmediashow.com or rob@newmediashow.com. Feel free to drop us a line, and we get some feedback from time to time, but feel free to master blast us and let us know what's going on. But I've been working. Yesterday I primarily worked on personal stuff all day. You saw my email that came out, right?
I'm trying to remember.
It was on the multi-site.
Oh, yeah, about your changeover to different domains for all of your shows. I think it's great news. Yeah.
You know, the template's not done yet. Some, you know, I have to kind of go slow, but we've got the website's been, the framework's been put in place. And mm-hmm. now all I got to, you know, what I'm doing now is I'm going through, because, all right, so instead of having one version or one configuration of PowerPress, I have, you know, six, and I have to go through and configure each one individually and get them all set up. So, you know, I'm pinging Angela yesterday, you know, we can make this easier. Oh, you know. So I added to his to-do list yesterday, and we were on, I don't know, I'd go to a meeting for quite a while. Back and forth, looking at things, and you know, having these epiphanies of, you know, like, wow, that imagine what we can do with that. So, you know, I added to his to-do list a lot. We're probably going to build another plugin for people that are using WordPress multi-site, and just a few things I saw here and there that I said, you know, we can't do this. We can't? No. And we're going to make some changes. But it's all good. You know, the only way you learn about this kind of stuff is actually do a conversion. And and really what I'm really building here is a network site. You know, it's been a single point of presence mm-hmm. site, but now it's going to be to do that, and really my biggest challenge in the design of the website accounts for what I want to accomplish. But if you have a multi-site and you have, okay, so one, you have to pick one site as the master. And I thought about bringing on a new brand as mm-hmm. the master, but I said, Geek News Central's got long legs. Let's just leave that the brand. You still want to be able to cross promote between the shows, even if it's going to be a mini little network. You want to promote this, yep. You want to promote Gadget Professor, Robot Underpants, all the other stuff. Mm-hmm. And once you go to these silos in multi-site, you got to have a way to bring the data back across.
Back and forth, sure.
And, hey, the photo people have done a great job. The they're about the only ones that have figured out how to set up, like, I don't want to call them galleries, but, yeah, I guess that's what they do. The photo people set up galleries. Yeah. But the galleries are added to as they shoot photos. With this, it's, you know, I just want this thing when we upload this show, and it's going to be on the newmediashow.com website, which still points at geeknewscentral.com. But when you upload the new media show, I want something to trigger on Geek News Central so that video is seen in the player. Now, I think I've got an idea. I was going to show you this, but this is, and there's nothing out there that does this. Nothing. No one's got a plug-in. No one's designed nothing. And I was going to bring this screen up. So, you know, when we developed TPN.TV, we did a little carousel thing here, which was, it works out really well. It's able to highlight some videos. And really, that's all you need is a image, a title. And then if you click on that, it would take you to the post, right? With the full video there. And the challenge that we have is this is being driven off of the actual blog posts themselves. It's not being driven by RSS.
Yeah.
So, you know, in order to, and I don't want my videos promoted on New Media. I don't want Geek News Central videos promoted on Geek News Central. I want all the other guys' stuff promoted on whatever I choose to put in this player area for, you know, on Geek News Central. And let me come back. So really what the problem then is I told Angelo, this is what I think we need to build. Because I searched and I searched and I searched. And, you know, I found these RSS aggregators that would, you know, make a real nice, you know, list. But I don't want a list. We're a visual. Oh. We're visual. So in order to put that into play, we got to build something. No one else got it. I said, well, just let's make it a new plugin, and then we'll just share it with the community, and we'll have something for people to use. But and then we've, you know, I tie in the podcasting part. I said, here's what we've already built that we can tie in. And mm-hmm. but, you know, it's really What you want to really do is, and this isn't necessarily important for folks that are doing audio, but you almost want to build, I don't want to say a YouTube-type site, but you want to have YouTube-type discovery when they land on your homepage.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that and I think you need to blend in the whole live streaming part, too, because yeah. I know that we've had two landing pages. We've had our homepage that's yep. really for our archives, and yep. then we've had a separate page for the live streaming part, and to bring those worlds together where you can just say, you know, newmediashow.com is yep. the destination to get everything. And so what you're talking about is like maybe on the New Media Show to have links to the other shows across the network, kind of scroll right. across this scroll at the top of the page.
And,
right?
And or somewhere in the page. I don't know if it's going to be vertical or where it's going to be, but the main thing, yeah. though, is that the page and the site still stands on its own. It still has the content. You know, yep. they come in the page, they're going to look for our content. They don't want to see our, you know, they basically want to see, and also, obviously, the live. Now, you know, what I've done in Geek News Central has been hokey for a long, long time. And there's real no good solution for it because, you know, I have the live video on the front page. And it works out well for people that come here. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that's the solution. When we have a live show, we turn that on. Or maybe the latest video just stays in the header and the chat room goes away. We'll have to play with that. But, you know, real estate of a website is challenging.
Yeah, it is. Well, the way your live player works right now is really fantastic. It's all because of YouTube, right?
Right,
I mean, once you've done a live show, that show becomes instantly available for yep. on-demand playback. And right. then also, even while it's live, you can rewind it all the way back to the
yep.
beginning.
Yep.
So, I mean, to have that kind of capability there, it's almost like that player for the New Media Show needs to be there on the page all the time.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's something to consider.
And it's definitely something where you got to figure out, too, you know, because people hit your website and they're there for... You know, maybe if you're lucky, you know, my Geek News Central has high retention time. You know, we have, you know, real high in the twos and threes and minutes of when they initially come, they stay and they don't leave right away. And then a large percentage of them stay a long time because they're watching on the website. But, you know, you still have that percentage. A lot of websites, you got 3 seconds or 4 seconds. You know, they come to the website, they browse it. And if it's not, usually people don't scroll down. So you got to think of the web mechanics too. So you got to think, oh, what am I going to put in this, you know, in this area that is going to keep people's attention long enough that they stay? And so.
Yeah, because I mean, most sites have a 40 to 50% bounce rate right off of the homepage.
Yeah.
And oftentimes that's just because the homepage often isn't focused enough. To try and you know pull that user in, or it doesn't satisfy what that user is looking for. I mean, I've been in building websites for a long time. You know, myself, and that was always my counsel to people looking to build a website is to really try and understand what your users are looking for and deliver that above the fold right away.
Yeah.
And that will. You know, funnel them into the site to get what they want that they're there to do. And I think that the big thing that people are looking to do on our website is to get to the content, number one. But also, and I don't know if you've thought about this too, are we going to have like the ability to like maybe post articles in there?
Or oh, yeah.
What's your thought on that? And where's that content coming from?
Well, you know, it's probably coming from us, but there's definitely okay. going to be, you know, the full blog will be available because it's, you know, yeah. it'll be right in the site design. But, you know, then again, you've got to, you know, you weigh a bunch of stuff. I was looking at a design called Blocked. And we've already got kind of a design laid out. It's going to be one of those, the new, you know, basically it's got all, you know, Geek News Central is long in a tooth. It'll expand and shrink depending on the browser size. And if they come into mobile, it'll get real narrow. And basically
it's
responsive design. Yeah.
Yep.
So, you know, I was looking at this, matter of fact, I think I have it here. Yeah, let me, yeah. It's a design called Blocked, and it was really, I mean, they have done some crazy, crazy stuff with themes these days. And, you know, you just look at the variants here that they have. You know, a lot of this stuff is really focused around, again, focused around photos, not video. And, you know, they have all kinds of different ways to, you know, highlight stuff on a homepage and, you know, and arrange it. And I don't know if this, you know, I was looking at this site quite a little bit and seeing what they were doing, but these are actually, as I'm switching here, different design types you can set as part of the default. You can do portfolios, you can do, a blog, a standard blog layout. You can have, it just goes on and on and on. Yeah. And the only thing I don't like about this particular site is that it's not really readable. You know, it's the text is just too small.
Yeah.
But
I'm sure that's all adjustable.
I'm sure it is, but you know, if you, you know, I told the guys are designing the new Geek News Central. Everything's got to be good. I don't want to have to be tweaking, but you know, that what they're doing with these site designs these days is really pretty incredible. And, you know, I'm just way overdue for an update, but the multi-site in itself has its own, I guess for a better word, challenges, because it takes WordPress to a whole new level. And I installed some stuff I've never installed before, and I'm not 100% sold on it yet. One of the themes I put in was something called BuddyPress, and boy, BuddyPress is just like widely popular. And as I'm looking through it, it's to me kind of hodgepodgey, at least that's the way, and maybe it's because my design doesn't fully support it, but you know, there's a huge number of plugins out there that help try to build communities and so forth, and I don't know if that's the one yet, but definitely from a management standpoint, a lot of stuff to think about going to a multi-site, because you want, at least I will want the theme to have, I guess for a better word, a common layout across all the sites, and you'll be able to change out branding and change colors a little bit, but the layout's going to look about the same. Mm-hmm. But what's really going to change is I want to be able to have, you know, I want Don to be able to go into his design and make element changes.
Uh-huh.
And I don't want to run, though, six themes installed on the system. I want to put the theme in once and then make certain elements available for the guys to be able to edit. And that is probably the harder, from a design standpoint, hard for the guys to do, because just the way multi-site really doesn't, it's all or nothing. You have to let them edit the whole theme, or you only let them edit a portion of it. So I guess we'll see where it ends up falling out, but I know the requirements I laid on them, and it's pretty good. But in top of this, and I'm hogging all the time here, but
it's okay.
I had the company that I've been using for DNS services. And of course, I run servers. I don't run hosting accounts. I have a servers over at GoDaddy, and DNS is, as you know, important part of, you know, making the net tick.
Yep.
And my company that I've been using for years, Netica, was bought by Dyn, and boy, all I can say is I'm no longer going to be with Netica.
Really?
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, they blew it in a big, big way. I ranted enough on my previous show that anyone over there that listened to it, their ears going to burn. But so I'm moving everything to Route 53. And moving some of the DNS back to GoDaddy and some of the sites that aren't so important. But I didn't even really think about it, but I've seen site improvement speeds already, because we're now moving to Route 53.
Uh-huh. I can make a big difference where you're at with DNS, and you know how fast they can route traffic is really important. You know, Todd, you were talking earlier about how it's amazing the WordPress templates and how web design is kind of moved, and I think that one of the big things that's not really talked about too often is how visual the web has become. And when I say visual, I mean, and there's some application here even to, you know, the podcasting space too. I mean, you look at like a Flipboard or even like a Stitcher, and I believe that we're in an era of photos. It's kind of the golden age of visual photography on the web, and you know, Twitter just announced last week that they're now supporting 4 photos in a tweet. So in more and more of these WordPress templates are very, very photo centric. Just like what you were saying, how they're very visual and so I think that, you know, people have talked about video being kind of the golden age of video and how video is dominant. I think what's happening right now is it's really the golden age of visual photography and online presentation of it in all forms. I mean, there's complete, you know, one photo takeovers of websites now. I mean, it's like, you know, like I was saying with Stitcher, if you load the Stitcher app for iOS, the first thing you see is a bunch of large visual imaging that you click on to get to audio programming. So that's the big trend that we're seeing right now around online media is visual imagery, not so much video anymore. And I think now the combination of the visual photography and audio, I think, is kind of where the next big phase is going. And so it's really interesting your perspective on it. That a lot of the templates are so visual, and I think it's an important trend, and I think it's only going to get more so. I think people taking photos is a huge part of what people do with their phones, and I think that's mainly where these photos are coming from. Sure, people are spending thousands of dollars on expensive
DSLR
digital cameras. Matter of fact, we had some kittens that were used by Creative Lab Creative Live, and they've been a guest on the show before, to do a whole like multi-day presentation on photography of pets online. It was a very popular kind of live broadcast here this past week. So you can just see people are really getting into photography, and I think it's a new media area. And I don't know what you think about all that, Todd.
Well, I think picking it, people have always said picking the right, the right photo to have as your cover art in your image is important, and it's for your embed, and all that stuff I think is important because people are, you know, they want to see, you know, why are cat pictures so popular, you know, and cat videos, yeah. You know, people want to see that stuff. You know, and yep. At this point, it's a little frustrating to me because I can find exactly what I want from an audio standpoint. I mean, not from an audio standpoint, but from a photographer standpoint. They've done an incredible job, but I'm having a real hard time finding. You know, I'm going to have to go out and build something. And it just to me is at this point, I'm thinking this is nuts. Why isn't someone else thinking like I am and have designed this already? If they have, they've kept it to themselves. It is kind of odd. Now, I will say this, the WordPress folks are finally, they came out with an update to, they put in a great video player, videoelement.js, just absolutely fantastic. And it was an HTML5 player, nice design, everything. And it's pretty much been adopted by most video podcasters already, but the audio player hasn't changed that much. I mean, I think we have a selection of 5 or 6 audio players that you can pick, mm-hmm. and obviously the people that had advanced the design on audio players for website is SoundCloud. They've got a great player. It looks nice. It's almost got a radio look. And yeah. Or Winamp look. It almost kind of Winampish. But so what's going on now is the WordPress folks are finally making some improvements, and we're going to see a much more robust player with playlists and that kind of stuff coming from them directly, which will help you know, help the podcasting space a lot, because we'll incorporate that sucker right away, so that people have this additional choice. But you know, I keep having people worried about the websites and their players and all this stuff, but they usually have no context to go along with their content. You know, they're missing all this other important stuff. But at the same time, the websites are largely becoming secondary. And now my site is important because we put up content all the time. And it's a destination for content, not just for podcasts. So, you know, I'm one of the small percentage of people that actually have writers that are putting content up on a regular basis. You'll see the most successful ones do. But at the same time, I understand that you know, people getting access to the content on the mobile site or on their iPad or on the Roku or is just as important from a branding standpoint as anything else.
Todd, do you think that we've charged down this path of apps for the last, I don't know, it's probably been, what, 5 years now?
Yep.
I get a feeling like, you know, I talk to, you know, a variety of people that are in the media, and I feel that maybe there's a pushback on that, that it's not as effective as people would like it to be, as far as, you know, media companies putting out their own app and all the stuff like that. And I feel a pullback to the web. And, you know, especially as you think about responsive design and what the potential is there, and kind of more web app kind of say it's cross platform, it's less expensive, relatively less expensive. Certainly there's capabilities in native apps on, you know, on the major platforms, that there's capabilities there that are better, I suppose. But I also get a sense that the web may be seeing a little glimmer of kind of a renewed desire to embrace. And I don't know if you've seen that or felt that at all. And I'm not sure if it's nostalgia or if it's a reaction to cost, or it's a development that's happened just based on all the things we've been talking about in relation to websites and how visual they are and how much better they are now than they used to be. And maybe one of the reasons that whole app thing happened in such a big and overwhelming way was because people were dissatisfied with what the web could do and what the web presented. And are we coming into a time when maybe the web is gonna be embraced more, and there's a little bit less focus on apps? So I don't think apps are going away, and I think that they will always have a place. But I just really wonder if the web. What's your thought on that?
Well, you had to be a cool kid. You had to have an app, right?
Yep.
And yep. That drove the fire. You know, very personally, I know that I don't think that people are getting as big a bang for a buck for their individual apps as they thought they would. You know, it's cool. It's bragging rights. It feeds our ego as content creators that we've got an app. I'm not discounting apps, specifically apps that are multi-site or multi-programming or a network app. I think if you have a network, by God, you better have an app. It just makes a lot of sense. As an individual content creator, I don't know, unless you're an Adam. If you're an Adam Carolla, sure. Or if you're Mark Maroon, absolutely. But you know, if you're a smaller show, you know, what's the dollar outlay you're going to have to put out every month, and how many people are actually going to use it? And, you know, I know what my show does people are coming in and getting the show via iTunes. And I've acquiesced that iTunes is king and probably going to stay that way for a while. Now, with iTunes going into the Android now with an app, at least that's what they've initially said they're going to do. It makes you go, you know, the eyebrows raise up a little bit. because at this point they may own Android too if they come into the space. It's hard to say.
Is that a good thing though? That's another question. Is that a good thing that iTunes owns podcasting on the two biggest platforms?
It's a testament to what Google hasn't done.
Yeah, it is, definitely.
So maybe to make the Google folks wake up a little bit. I don't know. Maybe they rest. I don't understand why Google hasn't come out with a podcast specific app. But you know, they've made it pretty doggone easy when you click, just think about this for a second, Rob. You know, for a long time now, you've been able to go over to my site, and if you land on my site with a mobile device and you click on that little iTunes button, it loads the app in the mobile device and you can subscribe to it and you're done. That quick. You don't have to go anywhere. All you have to do is hit my site and click on that with your browser and you're subscribed. It loads the app in your POW. How come I can't do that? You know, if I have an Android device and I do that, what happens? Nothing. Takes you to the iTunes store. You know, what is wrong with, you know, the Android folks? Why don't I have an Android logo on my website for the millions and billions of people that have Android devices? Why can't I come? So now what's going to happen? Okay, so they haven't said they're bringing a podcast app yet, but they're bringing an iTunes app. So logic follows that if they bring a podcast app, I have an Android device and I come to my website and I click on the iTunes logo and it loads in my Android app. You know, Android just gave away this. Yeah. What are they thinking?
Yeah. Well, Todd, Android has podcasting. It's called YouTube. Don't you know that?
Okay.
I know. And actually, there's a push on the part of YouTube right now. I would say it's a very gentle push to try and get podcasts onto YouTube right now, audio podcasts.
That's funny. Okay, great.
I know. It's like, you know, there's a great fit there, isn't there?
Well, you know, okay, so is YouTube, you know, I have never to this date received a check from YouTube. You know, are they going to pay me for having my content over there? Or what are they going to, and you know, oh my God, you talk about suppressed CPM rates. I don't even think what that's going to happen to the advertising dollars. It'll spell the end for some. They won't get the rate that they need to, you know, to be able to continue to do the shows and survive. And, you know, there's a lot of pressure in the digital space right now. More money. But, you know, if the money comes in the way they say it's doing to, it'd be great. But I don't know. I don't want to go to YouTube and listen to someone. I go to YouTube to watch someone.
Keith just commented in the chat room why we hate YouTube.
Well, we don't hate YouTube. But
yeah, I know. I think that's a misunderstanding of what we're saying here. It's the contrast between YouTube and podcasting. That it is like a oil and water situation, and it has been that way for a long time. It isn't that we hate YouTube. I think Todd and I would agree. YouTube has been a benefit to a lot of content creators, and it's been a benefit to a lot of media companies, and a lot of users obviously love it because they're over there. But when you speak in the context of podcasting, YouTube is a difficult thing for podcasters to deal with. I don't know what you think, Todd, but
well, it's that we've had many, many shows on this, that there are successful YouTubers and there are successful podcasters, but very few that do both. A few have bridged, and this studio did not get paid for by YouTube. This studio got paid for by podcast sponsors. And how many content creators have actually ever received a check from YouTube? On the contrast, I can absolutely guarantee that a lot of very small shows have received checks. Now, they don't get big checks, but they've gotten checks from, you know, companies like mine, companies like Rob's, you know, LiveSyn. You know, we've all been in the space helping podcasters monetize. Not to say that that's the reason that there's an issue between YouTube and podcasters, but for me, you know, no one wants to watch an hour and 30 minutes of us on, you know, on a playback. They'll listen, but they won't watch. They'll watch the live when we're up live, but very rarely will someone watch for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I mean, it's I think YouTube will continue to grow and will become a big player. And I think it's very possible that it's exactly like what you said. If iTunes with podcasting comes to Android, I think you'll see Google take some action there. I mean, that would be a natural reaction from a competitive perspective. But the truth of the matter is that if iTunes launches over there, you know, any reaction that Google has is going to be, you know, behind the eight ball.
Yep. And don't get me wrong, there's great podcasting apps on Android. And some of the most popular ones and that are doing great numbers are really well, but there's no single one-click subscribe. You have to load the app. You have to find the show. You have to subscribe. So tell people, go download Downcast. Go to the search function. Look for Geek News Central. Find Geek News Central. Pick the audio version and hit subscribe. Why not just come to geeknewscentral.com, click the button on the website, and they're done. You know, that's how simple the iTunes has made it, and it's one of the reasons why they're king. It's why their app is king. It's why their platform is king in the space, and they've been here since 2005, July of 2005.
Todd, fewer and fewer podcasters are putting their RSS feed on their website, though.
Don't need an RSS feed. You just need the iTunes button.
But that's
another problem. You know, the few and fewer are putting their RSS feeds on. So now what you're doing is there's still no one-click subscribe for an RSS. And if I was going to build a Android app, I'd try to figure a way to trick the system to make me the default load for someone pressing the RSS feed. But you have to be careful with that because, you know, the RSS is a means to get there, but, you know, you just have to teach your audience on how to go subscribe to your show. I shouldn't have to teach. It should be just natural. They should be able to, at this point, they know, but.
There is a way that you can do that, you could code a link on your website to
force
do
your
that.
App to load.
To particular apps, right?
Yeah. It's not easy. I think you have to have your own function call. You have to have your own, and you have to extend the, if one without the other and things go haywire.
Yeah, that's right. If you don't have the app loaded or something like that, the challenge, and we faced this challenge at Microsoft too around Zune, was there's two ways of doing it. You can have a protocol there that will find the app on your local system and trigger that connection. But if you don't, then there needs to be a kind of a web-based process that would prompt a call to the server that would pull up an opportunity to download that software. So you have to have kind of a two-layered approach to it. That's a little bit more technically challenging to actually do that, right? But it is possible.
Now, one thing Keith is saying, since I'm watching on it now on my big TV, a big screen TV with Chromecast from his Nexus 7. So he started the show on YouTube on Chromecast. I mean, on his Nexus 7, and then he passed the show up to his television, which is cool. I love it. That's fantastic.
Yeah, that's great.
And for live, that's great. And for people that have a Chromecast and want to watch on their big screen, that's why we do video.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. But once this part of the show is what live is a means to an end. When we do live, it's because I'm recording it. And when we get done, I post-process it, get it embedded, get it encoded and uploaded onto a server. they can serve the rest of the community. So while some people do go watch the show on YouTube post show, 99.9% of the, actually probably more like 99.999% of the rest of the views comes from someone that does it on demand. Later, they don't very rarely use YouTube as the on-demand. I think the on-demand audience is less than 1% from YouTube, whereas the rest of the folks are grabbing it via iTunes or, you know, coming to the website and playing it on the website directly. And it's not the YouTube player. It's the Podcast HTML5 player, which I could substitute as a YouTube player, but I never have. Because I just have a little more control of the quality of the video. So, you know, that's
but I do like the flexibility of how we produce this show.
Anytime,
and how
anywhere,
it's distributed.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's amazing. You know, it's a really good example of taking advantage of all the technologies out there, of being able to syndicate and distribute a show. You know, I did a radio show for many, many years. It was all pre-produced, but I spent a couple of years actually live in the studio doing it too. So I have this background of doing it live and doing it on demand, and each have their advantages and their disadvantages. I mean, I love to do all of the post-production on a complex radio show, and I say that really honestly and genuinely. I know you're not a big fan of post-production, but there are some distinct advantages to post-production from a radio experience perspective. You just look at like a This American Life or Radio Lab or whatever, and those shows are classic examples of the value add of post-production, but it does take a lot of time, and it does take staff, and it takes a lot of investment. I think a lot of people in the podcaster community don't really realize how many people and how much time it takes to produce a Radio Lab episode, and how complex that is, or even a 99%, you know, invisible, you know, episode. There's a lot of shows that are very popular that have production teams behind them, and you just don't know it. Right, because it seems so. It's like this one guy talking, or a combination of guys talking, and I mean, you just think it was something that was recorded in somebody's, you know, bedroom or something, and that's just not the case.
You know, for me, the post production is fun if I had the time.
Yeah,
and I just don't have the time, so that's one of the reasons why I did live, is because you really can't stop. You have to continue to move forward. And I personally believe that it made me a much better content creator doing live, because you had to think a little bit ahead of time, make sure that you had your game plan on. We kind of free flow here.
Yeah.
But, you know, Rob and I have known each other long enough that we can do that. But on my regular show, I have, you know, I've got a couple of hours of show prep. And then when I go live, it's got to be on. And sometimes I'm not 100% on. Where mm-hmm. if I was doing just recording here in the studio and putting it up later, I would probably go out and say, man, maybe I should go cut that segment out. It didn't turn out so well. And it would probably help my numbers, because you sometimes in the back of your brain, when you're talking about a particular topic, you're thinking, man, this is going sideways. How do I bail out? And you really can't. You got to finish up and people can tell, you know, and sometimes I even mention, well, that one sucked, you know, you got a lot going on, something's in the background, it's distracting you, and it can affect the show. So I think the editing, I understand why people edit. I probably would love to edit, but I just don't have the time, and that's largely the reason I don't.
Well, and I think it's also, and you've said this many times too, it's also, I mean, if you do a lot of that stuff, and I can point to it from my own experience, is that people that do that tend to burn out.
Right.
And because my wife and I did it for 6 or 7 years, every week, massive amount of post-production, because we were syndicated across XM satellite radio network and public radio stations. And I mean, I really went all out when it came to a syndication strategy back then. But it forced me to have to create different versions of my radio show too. I mean, I had to create a version of it that was cut up into 6 segments for XM. And then I did a different version for public radio stations because they didn't want any commercials. So I had to cut out, and it was a shorter, you know, I did an hour show, but the public radio stations only wanted a half hour version of my show. So we had to create another version of it for the 2 or 3 public radio stations that we were on with that show back then. So there's a lot you can do with post-production to kind of make your show, you know, fit with some sort of distribution strategy, though I would say that those options are a little less now than they used to be. Though I would say, as I think about the place that broadcast radio has in this whole scheme of things, is that I believe that those folks are starting to look at podcasts as a potential source of content. I think once again, I mean, that nothing is new, and that has been tried before too. But I do believe that radio is starting to get in a position where they need to start looking at these online shows as a source of content to keep themselves relevant. And I think we may see other opportunities coming in the future for podcasts. Shows that started out as podcasts wind up getting picked up by radio, you know, syndication or radio stations. And all you have to do is look as far as what's been going on in the public radio space to see how that could happen.
You know, with 936 episodes underneath my belt on my other show, and believe it or not, this show is actually closer to 100 plus shows, because at one time we were doing, this show changed 41 shows ago. Yeah. You know, if I'd had to have done massive editing on each one of those shows, there would be no way my wife would have divorced my butt. You know, this show would not exist. There's no way, you know, and in all honesty, you know, and people cringe, and I tell them this, but the audio post-processing takes about 5 minutes, and the video takes a little longer because I have to import it, I have to do the chops, and I have to encode 3 different versions of the show, so that maybe takes 10 minutes, so yeah. 15 minutes to get the video producing, another, you know, this show doesn't take very long to do the show notes, 5 minutes to do the show notes, and waiting for the uploads. My tech show, you know, really what it does is I sit down at this desk at about 6 p.m. Maybe I start at 5:30. By 7:30, the show prep's done. I've got all the articles that I want for the night. Usually I go take a shower, just kind of freshen up, get studios ready. It's on. It's running. Come in here about 10 minutes beforehand, jot down some notes about what's been going on, hit record, hour 10 later, I hit stop. So, and usually I go live at 8, so that means 9:10, 9:15 before I'm done recording. Then it's, and usually by that time, I'm just about done. You know, stick a fork in me, I'm pretty much pow for the day. But do the audio again, do the video. By 10:15, the video is done encoding, and I started uploading, and I usually leave the studio by 10:30. So 5 hours, you know, is yeah. the time investment to do an hour and 10 minute show. And that has been consistent for 10 years. Mm-hmm. So let's say it was 5 hours and no editing. Rob, how long would it take to edit a 1 hour program accurately? 2 hours, 3 hours?
Yeah, I think I calculated it once for a very complex version of our show back then. This was like back in 2005 and 2004. We would probably spend close to probably 16 hours on one episode.
Wow!
Not just in post-production, though. That would be in like booking guests,
right,
and doing ad spots and doing segments doing outros and intros. And I mean, because we did the whole shebang from one end to the other, you know, with the custom, you know, outros and intros and breaks and things like that. And then had to cut it up into all these different versions for all of the different syndication platforms that we were on back then. So yeah, it was, and then script writing. So we had scripts that we would pull together each week for every show. So we would stay on target with that production schedule. And I'm sure that that's what Radiolab does. And that's what a lot of these big shows do, is they, everything is scripted and choreographed and pre-produced, and then the team attacks it and puts it together like a jigsaw puzzle, right? And has, I mean you have to work with fading up and fading down the audio so it flows together, and if you're blending together any music into it, which is also what we did back then, you know, that takes massaging and working in waves and exporting that to a final product that then you upload all these different versions to all the different platforms that, you know, satellite syndication required 4 breaks, but XM required 6 breaks. So, you know, things like that, right? So you have like 5 different versions of your show that you had to put out. So, and I don't believe that many podcasters are doing that today. I think most don't need to, but back in those days, I was looking for every potential way that I could find an audience for my show and trying to build an audience. And I built it up to, you know, approximately about a million listeners per episode back then. So it was a lot. There was a lot of people listening back then.
You know, it's I just can't imagine having to go through that.
Yeah,
that process. You know, it's already tough enough. I have, you know, my wife knows Monday and Thursday evenings that for the past 10 years, nothing gets scheduled on those nights. Nothing. Yeah. That's those nights are blocked out. And if a kid has a recital or if there's some event, you know, I have to try to figure out how to scramble and see that. And sometimes I can't. And that's one of the reasons why I chose to do this show so early. People think I'm crazy getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning and rolling here at 6. But just like this morning, Rob and I are going to finish at about 7:30 my time. By 8 a.m., I'm out the door with a kid headed to town to go to judo. So it's, you know, it's, you know, you got to have a balance. And, you know, I hear him wrestling around back there getting breakfast ready, and someone's probably going to bring me a cup of coffee here in a few minutes. It's kind of how it works. But, you know, most of folks that are doing, I'm lucky, but most of folks that do content, you know, they got a job. So, you know, they're going to work and then they're coming home and doing their shows or doing it on the weekend. And, but you have to have a very, very accommodating wife that will let you.
Well, I was lucky. My wife was actually doing a lot of the post-production. So, because I had that job for much of the time, you know, back when I was doing my, you know, my show.
Yeah.
You know, she was a co-host on it too. So she was in the middle of doing the outros and the intros too. If I wasn't around because of a meeting or if I had to be somewhere, I couldn't actually record it. She would do it. She was really good at it too. I mean, she was a terrific podcaster herself, and, you know, a radio person. And she had her own show that she did also back in those days. She did a very early TV show fan podcast called the Boston Legal Podcast. And she had, you know, stars from the show on her podcast. And it was still today. I mean, I met with a guy in LA just this past week that worked with, works with William Shatner, that was a huge fan of her show, back when, you know, Captain Kirk was on the Boston Legal TV show.
You know,
so I mean, these things, you know, you build followings for these shows, right. and if they're really, really, really good, people remember them. I mean, it's really amazing.
It is pretty amazing how the, you know, I think what's really amazing is how, you know, that people figured out that, you know, that who I am sometimes, because, you know, for many, many years I was doing, just audio. I'd go places and say something. People would come up and grab me just because they recognized my voice.
Yeah.
Now I put my ugly mug on video, and it happens, you know, as often or more than before. But it's true that people follow and they know, and you know, almost it's a door opener too. It's kind of an interesting dynamic. I digressing here. I'm getting off track. having a moment. If we're going to edit, I'd cut that out. So let's switch topics a little bit, Rob. So what's happening with you guys? You guys just staying busy down there in LA? You getting a handle on things now, or?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's really an interesting space down there. I mean, we're you know, and we're talking about Podcast One. So if you haven't heard of it, or you haven't gone to our site or whatever, it's an interesting play in the podcast space around a real focus on monetization and ads, and then also creating original content and trying to really, really tap into big celebrity talent down in Los Angeles and Hollywood to produce programs. And we're constantly adding new shows from the podcaster community to the platform, as well as out there talking to people. We're constantly having meetings with big celebrity talent, and to recruit them to come in and do a podcast with us, and speak to all their celebrity friends and bring them in and create those, you know, new types of content. You know, like we're huge podcasters around the pro wrestling area, the WWE, which has huge fan bases that really hadn't, as a genre, that really hadn't been tapped into until Podcast One. And we've been able to build some pretty significant shows in the iTunes store. If you go look for Podcast One in there, there's some pretty big shows that are in the top, you know, 100 and the top 10 of the sports category. And so we are kind of trying to work and build new genres of content, and getting in the big celebrity talent that you wouldn't think of as podcasters is what we're really all about down there. And I think it can only help the podcasting space to have that diversity of content that can attract maybe different listeners that maybe, you know, wouldn't listen to tech, or wouldn't listen to, you know, a Radio Lab or a public radio show, or you know, a tech show. So I think I'm working hard to try and make that whole thing work, and I'm optimistic. I think that there's big opportunity there for us to move this space to be more of a mass medium that attracts and reaches a much broader audience base.
Hey, Rob, one thing that it just crossed my mind, you know, I know you guys, where you guys are heading, what you guys are doing. We had a call with a client earlier in the week, and I was talking to him to ask him to come out to Podcast Movement. And they said that they would. And part of my pitch to the Podcast Movement folks is I'm going to do my session's going to be a panel that I'm going to have the media buyers on, and it's not going to be me talking. I'm just going to act as a Q&A type of thing, and try to get their perspective of what's going on in the podcasting space. So just purely, you know, having the advertiser up there saying, this is what we see, this is what we're doing, this is what you can do, this is how you can help us in the process. And I don't think, to my knowledge, no one's done a session like that before, where they actually have a buyer or buyers discussing what they're looking for in the advertising space. So I'm kind of excited to be able to do that. You know, I know we're a ways away from that, but I'm pretty excited to bring those folks in and do that particular session. I think it'll be a good one.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, it's that community has not really been heard from too much. I mean, it would be interesting to bring in a podcast ad buyer onto this show.
Yeah, well, I probably can arrange that.
Yeah, I would think you probably could. You could just bring on the person you've been working with for a while now at GoDaddy, maybe. I mean, it would be a good person to bring on.
Yeah, that'd be good. I could bring on, I've got the full gamut of folks. I'm probably some of the same people you guys talk to. So it'd be good to have them on and just kind of talk about it, talk about their goals and what they need and what they want. And, you know, each of them works a little different, you know, and some of them have certain criteria. And one thing that I've been doing is trying to, I have a certain way of doing campaigns. You guys do a certain way of doing campaigns. And one's not better than the other. But the certain elements of them are still the same. But, you know, sometimes it's partially or largely education process get people, because, you know, radio's had these established processes for years.
Yep.
And so the question that came up the other day is, what's the percentage of talent fee? And I'm like, we don't have a talent fee. What's your percentage of creative fee? We don't have a creative fee. And, you know, they're like, huh? What do you mean you don't have it? I said, we don't have a talent because the person is a talent and he is the creative. He owns the property. It's not owned by someone else. And they're like, oh, so 100% of the advertising is part of the 100%. I said, yeah. You know, so it is kind of in it. So we just, the language talk is a little different. It's kind of funny, but it'll be nice to have a couple of people. I'm trying to get two to join me for the whatever session I get. So I got to reach out to those guys and let them know that hopefully I can get a spot on Saturday so I don't have to have them there on a Sunday. Yeah. It should be fun.
Oh, yeah. No, it'll be interesting back there to see more podcasters and to kind of blend those worlds together a little bit more, bring the ad buyers that have been relatively silent. I mean, it's an interesting question that you raise. I mean, you just don't hear from those folks much at all in this space. And it would be good to have that, I think. I mean, it would be an education probably for a lot of people, and to speak to some radio buyers too.
Yeah.
And so to get a feel. To see how how the space is different and what they think about, you know, I know we've had some radio consultants on talking about the differences in the space, but, you know, I know Mark Ramsey was on the show. I mean, he's a big proponent of podcasters going over to radio and being, you know, and contributing to the broadcast dial's success in the long run. And I know a lot of podcasters are probably a little bit against that.
I don't know why they would. You know, if you're first and foremost a content creator, and I think that would be something awesome to be able to do. And I've got a friend here who does. He started as a podcaster now, and his co-host, they have a NPR show. It's called Bite Marks Cafe that they do on NPR. I think Thursday afternoons. But, you know, the NPR model, you know, you got to have the season of raising money and, so everything goes along with that. And, you know, most radio stations today, if they're not a talk radio station, their programming is just laid out. And, you know, the last place you want to be is on a 9 o'clock on some AM channel talking tech. I don't think that's the time to be on that. And if you're going to be on a weekend, especially if you're doing tech, you know, you're competing against Kim Komando and Leo and whoever else has been syndicated for many, 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 many years.
Yeah, that's right. And I don't believe that technology as a topic area is really the appropriate genre these days for broadcast radio.
Well, it's better than listening to some guy that's talking about eye health or weight loss or...
Well, the truth of the matter is a lot of those kind of programs are basically commercials.
Of course.
I mean, a lot of those stations have been selling airtime for a long time. I know I got caught up in that world too. I had to pay for airtime on a couple of radio stations that I was on. Had opportunities to take my show to a big station in Seattle. They wanted to charge me like $1,400 per episode. And they would take 50% of the ad.
Wow.
Ad placements on top of that.
That's crazy.
But you know, you supposedly you could sell an ad for $200 or $300 a spot. So I mean, you had the opportunity to.
But you had to sell the spots.
Well, yeah. They would also sell those spots for you as well. They would obviously take a commission on those and apply that against your bill. But nonetheless, you had to guarantee the revenue on that for the radio station. And I never went for those kind of deals where I had my show on a big radio station that I had to pay a big nut like that. I always went with the smaller stations that I had to pay like, you know, $50 or $100 an hour to be on. But, you know, and I think that even today, I think those opportunities exist for podcasters. But I think in the bigger scheme of things, and this kind of goes back to what Mark Ramsey was talking about, is that if you're a successful podcaster, you know, I think you can bring some value to a radio station. The problem is do you want to be so local? You know, I think it's a limitation, especially if they're expecting you to create original content over there.
Right.
You know, it needs to be a true kind of syndication strategy. If you're going to do anything on radio, if you're a podcaster, it needs to be, you know, like a national syndication strategy. Also, I just don't think it makes sense to do it these days. Because might as well just stay as a podcaster.
Yeah. And guess what? If they're making you pay, it's a lot cheaper.
Yeah. And really, I mean, in any given market, really, how many listeners are you really going to have nowadays? I mean, it's, for one thing, you don't really know.
Yeah.
There's no way for you to know. Always a guess.
In the chat room, it says, and this is my mom that's actually listening. She says, watching. She says,
sure,
usually I listen. Today, the bandwidth is available for video, also making a cushion for the rocking chair with the help of some 4 feet here, so she's got some cats bothering her. But you know, and that's another thing. You look at my mom's situation; she truly lives in the country, and there's no broadband, so they have reverted to getting wireless and satellite, and that's how they get their. You know, they have to be careful on how much bandwidth they use, or it costs them a lot of money. So we still have people in this country that. You know, some of us are fat, dumb, and happy with two internet pipes in our, you know, in the studio. But a lot of folks in rural America don't.
Yeah, still today. I mean, you would think by now all those people would have good access, but it just wasn't economical, right, to supply fast bandwidth out to such remote places.
And it's good. And she's not really that remote. She's only 12 miles from the biggest town. But, you know, the cable stops, 100 foot from probably from the city limit line, you know. So it's not necessarily even, it's just not close. It's not easy. So don't want to go too far down the rabbit hole here on talking about the money part. But, you know, I've been watching the podcast community over the past, I watch all the stuff on Google Plus. I watch on Facebook. And a lot of people are still asking the age-old questions. Hey, I've been doing my show this long. This is how big my audience is. People giving suggestions about having, you know, good chairs. You know, and basically, you know, all the kind of – it's like this reoccurring. It's just – it goes in full circle month after month, new people coming in asking stuff about equipment and setup and, you know, and I think the community as a whole – is doing a pretty good job helping new podcasters get launched. There, for a time there wasn't, but now I think it's pretty good. The amount of support that's really happening in the podcasting space, and the two communities or three communities I hang out is the podcast community on Facebook, and then there's two G+ communities: the podcasting technology resource community and the podcasters community on G+. Both of those are pretty active. Not a lot of pitching going on, but a lot of discussions and sometimes arguments, which is good because differing opinions is always good. So, Rob, are you hanging out any places and watching the space besides that?
Yeah, there's a few private podcast groups that are on Facebook that kind of conversations happen around the space. They're not kind of public, so... So that's mainly where I get a lot of the information that's going on in the space from the kind of the larger companies involved in the space. Yeah. So, I mean, it's an interesting time. I did also notice that the Adam Carolla folks with the Carolla Digital have been putting out a real aggressive push over the last week and a half or so around raising money and raising awareness for the podcast patent dispute that he's up against with personal audio.
Yep.
So I don't know if you're hearing about those kind of things too, but that issue is still bubbling around in the space, and people are, you know, it feels like it's being ramped up to a higher level of conflict that's happening between this patent and different podcasters.
Are they going after more podcasters?
Well, there's been, you know, there's been quite a few that have gotten letters. I think though that this situation with Adam Carolla, I think is the first to really reach, you know, a kind of like a conflict stage, right? Where there's concern about, you know, actually going to court and actually, you know, starting this process, you know. The there's other activities around the Electronic Frontier Foundation, you know, doing things in court too, which is kind of going on simultaneously here. But I don't know that there's really any kind of resolution to the issue yet. I think it's premature to think that we're going to see this patent kind of shut down as a issue in the space. I don't know what your thoughts on this, Todd, or if you even want to have thoughts on it. But it seems like it's still bubbling out there, and it's still a concern to a lot of podcasters.
Well, to be honest with Rob, on the advice of my attorney, I'm very limited on what I can say.
Sure.
As Adam says, there's an epic battle that's brewing here. I don't know how much money he's raised. I was going to go look at his Fund Anything website. He's done pretty good.
Yeah.
$250,000 is where they're at right now from a fundraising. But they, you know, I think they're trying to raise $1 million, I think. And that is probably the number of what it's going to take to fight to have the lawyer fees.
Yeah, and he's been going on, you know, TV shows and other podcasts and really doing a pretty significant, you know, kind of publicity campaign around this whole topic too, to help raise money and then also just raise some awareness of the issue, right? So it's been a big push, you know, inside his organization for a couple of weeks now.
And I know that they've got this going on, and I guess a lot of people are keeping their fingers crossed that the EFF prevails. If they do, that stops it in its tracks.
Yeah.
But there's no guarantee there. And if this thing goes to court in this, if it actually goes to court in Texas, the, how should we say it? The chances of them winning are pretty good because they, the North Texas, Northeastern Texas court systems are notorious for these battles to take place. And the juries over there love the cash settlements that come into their communities.
Yeah.
And it's
money talks, right?
It's a business. Yeah. So I don't know. We'll see. We'll see where this leads. You know, it'll if they are successful, it's going to change everything. And I don't think the community, I don't think they can, the community can afford it. There's just not that much money in the space. There's money, yeah, but not that much.
Yeah.
You know, and depending how much the demand is, you know, I don't know how much they've asked Adam. Has Adam said how much they asked?
I haven't heard any actual numbers. I mean, I'm sure it's a, you know, I've heard it's multi-millions, so.
How, you know, he's, all right, you know, never mind. I'll be quiet. That's a lot of money. It's a lot. And, you know,
well, he's a very, I mean, he's a very successful podcaster, so.
But he's got, you know, he's got a business too. It's, he does. It's not like he's depositing $1 million in his bank account every month. That's not happening. You know, come on, let's be realistic. It's not those type, he's not making those types of dollars.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's, I don't know. It's an interesting it's an interesting time. And you know, the legislation is going through Congress right now that they're, if it gets passed, help start stymieing some of this stuff that's going on.
Oh, it's probably around patent trolls.
Yeah.
Stuff. Yeah. Yes. So there's kind of a dual thing going on here. There's the Congress is, you know, trying to crack down on these types of things, but I think they're only going to go so far. I don't think it's going to eliminate any kind of legal effort around this stuff. I think it'll just, you know, be a little bit of a, you know, a pushback, but we'll see. I don't know for sure what's going to happen on that side.
Apparently the folks that are doing the suing had an interview with This American Life. Have you heard that?
Yeah. That was probably almost a year ago, I think.
Oh, okay. So I'm seeing,
I mean, unless it was something more recent here.
Yeah. So I'm just reading through his comments. So has it been, have you heard, is there been podcasters that haven't announced that they've gotten sued?
No, I haven't heard for fact that anybody else has been sued. I do know that quite a few podcasters have gotten letters.
Right.
Trying to settle.
Yeah.
Those ultimately could lead to, you know, a case in court eventually.
So there have been additional individual podcasters that have gotten letters.
Oh, definitely.
Oh, yeah. That's interesting. Is it normally the bigger shows or what?
From what I've heard, it's kind of, it tends to be more bigger shows, but there's been smaller shows too that have gotten letters. I don't know, you know, what the criteria was of why those shows were picked, but I've heard that smaller shows, not on the scale of Adam, have been sent letters. I don't know why those shows were picked.
You know, and if you know, here's a challenge too. If you're, you know, this is one of the things I did at the very beginning, my show. You know, I'm covered by a corporation. I have a full-blown corporation that everything operates under. Nothing is on a sole proprietorship or anything. I do my business through my main company. And, you know, if you're an individual and have worked as a sole proprietor and you get one of these notices, you have no protection whatsoever. It's on you. It's not on your company, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, those individuals that if they don't have a business wrapper around their business, their houses and their livelihood, their cars and their bank accounts could be at risk.
Yeah, I think that the only real protection would be if you were like a C corp. I mean, even if you're a limited liability corporation, there's not a lot of or a partnership or anything like that. I don't believe that there's a lot of protection there.
Yeah, so that's what we did. We actually were an S corp, but it's got the same protections as a C corp.
Yeah. So I mean, it depends on how far down that path you go, how much real protection you have. I mean, these days they can still file suit against you, even if you're a C corp. They can still try.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
They may not be successful because of that. Corporate entity kind of being in between, but they can still try.
You know, and the thing is, it's if you can't afford a lawyer, they win by default. You know, it's like if you can't defend yourself, you know, hire a lawyer. It's you know, look at the money Adam's having to raise, and it's to pay the legal bills. It's an incredible amount of money.
I mean, you're not guilty of anything until there's a judgment on you.
All right,
but anybody can bring anything against you on civil court.
Yeah.
And it's up to you to defend yourself.
Yeah.
And that's always the risk here. But that's the case, you know, with anything in a small business. I mean, if somebody trips on, you know, on a curb outside of your house.
Yep.
It's really as simple as that. It can happen there too. So
we'll see where they go and how this turns out, but I don't know. I don't think his numbers went up very much recently. I think I looked at it a couple of weeks ago, and he's got a ways to go on raising cash.
Yeah. But also I think that the Electronic Frontier Foundation, they may have to come back to the community for another round too.
Well, if they do, you know, they raised more than they asked for last time, so.
Yeah. I mean, if Adam has to raise as much as he's talking about raising, I can just imagine what the Electronic Frontier Foundation may need, unless they're pulling funds from other budgets that they have.
You wonder if, you know, with Adam, with the star power he has, I would imagine I'm sure he can get some lawyer help that might be willing to even do it pro bono. I don't know if anybody does this pro bono or not.
Probably
does pro bono, but doesn't do it well.
So anything else going on in the space?
Not too much.
From what you're seeing?
I think it's pretty quiet. The folks over at iHeartRadio are still making a push and trying to get podcasters on board, which, you know, is cool. I just wish they would be, wish they'd start, for a better word, pushing back the stats data. That's the only thing that just drives me crazy, along with the other platforms that aren't doing it. If they don't want to be included, I figure, of course, I'm promoting them here by talking about them, but if I'm going to put my show over there, I'm definitely not going to promote if I don't know if they're driving one listener or 10 or 100. You know, if I knew they were driving 1,000 and I could prove it, I might be willing to, you know, say something about them from time to time, but I'm not over there on the platform yet. I did look at SoundCloud as a second point of pride. To be honest with you, wow, what a hot mess that is on that site. I don't understand why anyone would want to have their podcast over there as a primary point of presence. It's just a lot of confusion on how it actually even works.
Well, and I don't get a sense that there's a lot of commitment to podcasting on the part of SoundCloud. There's a program out there, and they keep talking about it, and I know that they want podcasters to host their stuff over there, and they're willing to give away bandwidth to do that on occasion, I've heard, to try and attract that. But I do kind of wonder about their commitment to the space. I know it's difficult to transition out of there. if you want to go somewhere else once you're on their platform.
Yeah.
Just a small thing like in your feed from them, your podcast feed from them, each of the episodes that you download off of that downloads as a different file name than what's in the feed.
Wow.
So you kind of have a, you know, it that makes it a little difficult to transition.
One thing that I've seen too is that, you know, even some mainstream, you know, some companies have been hosting for a long time. You know, they have, they're not making it easy for podcasters to move. We're probably moving 20 to 30 shows a week off of competitors' platforms, and probably there's people going the other way as well.
Sure.
But you know, some of the verticals, we do redirects. Libsyn does a redirect if they have a customer leave. So, you know, we're both playing nice, but some of the other podcast hosts are not. You can't even, good luck getting a support question answered with those folks. They just, it appears to be running on autopilot. Nobody's home. And we've got some well-established shows that have been on those platforms, a couple hundred episodes. They're like, I don't want to lose my audience. And we're saying, sorry, here's a contact at Apple. See if they'll change it. And many times they can't, because the way the feed was submitted in the first place, it's shown that it's owned by the hosting company. And so we've run into that a lot. One specific company in particular that's being really, I guess for a better word, pretty naughty and not being nice. So I just wish podcasters would pay more attention to controlling their feed.
Yeah, I mean, it's important, that's for sure.
And it's not important for the listener, but it's important for the podcaster. You know, that's the, I guess I should follow that up with, because we're all consuming content any which way. So anyway, we're here at just about an hour and a half already, Rob. Any thoughts next week? Should I try to get the media buyer on, or what should we do?
Yeah, I think we should. I think it would be great to have a guy on like that to talk about that side of the industry. I think it would be really good to have.
I'll reach out to my rep, and we'll see if they're available. I'll let you know. They should be able to tell me pretty quick, early in the week. But we'll keep our fingers crossed. Any other thoughts on guests for future? I know you were working on someone that wasn't able to be on today. Who was that?
It was James Harold, who does the Paranormal. The Paranormal podcast.
Oh, so, okay.
So he's been a long-time podcaster. He's been doing his show since 2005, too. The other guest that, or other person, or a representative from a company I'd like to get on the show, too, is from a company called Patreon. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
No.
It's this crowdfunding platform for podcasters.
Oh yeah.
Or it's not specifically for podcasters, but podcasters are using this platform, like Tom Merritt, where you know, his audience pays him like a couple bucks you know, a month, and he's making, Tom Merritt's making like 10 grand a month doing his podcast now.
Oh, that's
from
not,
this.
Well, he's got a big enough name, he can probably pull those kinds of numbers. That's good.
Yeah. The spelling of it is Patreon.
Patreon.
Patreon. Yeah, here I'll punch it into the chat room.
I've got it. Huh.
So you should go check those guys out. And talk to them. You know, I mean, it'd be great to have their founder on the show, and I'll definitely reach out and talk to him, because it could be an option for, you know, for podcasters to you know, support. The website says support the creators you love.
Yeah, Geek Beats on there as well.
Yep.
Oh, they actually even show how much they're earning. 279 patrons, $7,554 per month. Well, that's cool. Wow. That's kind of interesting. This might be worth looking into. Oh, that's cool. Huh.
It's another kind of paid premium model.
Yeah. So it's like they send folks over there, and it is on a monthly basis. It's not just a one-time.
Yep.
It's too bad they couldn't get patron as a domain name, so they had to choose something else, Patreon. So that's pretty cool. So Callie Lewis, $75.54 a month. That's a nice hunk of change.
It is.
Let's see here. Who else is in this thing? Can I see? Music, videos. No other podcasters on. Who's Evil Hat Productions? Wow, making $3,274 a month. That's that replaces a sponsor or two.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tom is up to $10,340. Yeah, that's nice.
Kelly, I mean her numbers are amazing. Only 279 sponsors or supporters, but she's raising $7,500 a month.
Well, even Tom, it doesn't take too long. $3,580, I think like $3 a person, you know, or something like that. Well, this is pretty cool. I may have to go check this bad boy out.
Yeah.
Maybe do one for this show, support the new media show.
There you go. Well, we can give it a try, and you know, we can write it along it's kind of a site update, right?
It's a double-edged sword, right? If you do bad, it's a like you're like, oh man, they suck.
Well, I think we're going to have to ramp it up a little bit. I think we're going to have to do more stuff with the show. I think we'll have to bring scripts and post-production.
Okay, great. So I wonder what their cut is. How much of a percentage? This is a smart idea. I just wonder how much of a cut they have.
So everybody was talking about, you know, my cat wanting to be a podcaster. Yeah. So I'm gonna help him out here. Come on, Si, talk.
Oh, funny. He's like, what's that mic? You're gonna lick the microphone. That's right. All right, everybody, thanks for being here. And if you've got comments on the show, feel free to email Rob and I. Of course, you can send an email to rob@newmediashow.com or todd@newmediashow.com. And we appreciate your ongoing support and look forward to being back with you next week. Rob, any final parting thoughts?
No, just, you know, keep podcasting out there. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, just go to @RobGreenlee, and that's with two E's at the end. And, you know, I regularly post about podcasting, so keep up with me there.
All right. Very cool. All right, everybody. Thanks. We'll see you next time. Everyone take care. And here from Honolulu, aloha.
Bye.